This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Wake up!
Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
It's going to be cold today, but I say it's winter in Chicago.
But it's like -1 feels like -19.
It's cold, real cold.
Irene, thank you for the weather forecast.
Shut up.
We hope to hear from you tomorrow. Give us some more weather.
Fight me, you loser.
You don't want that.
What is this feels like temperatures?
I think it has to do with wind chill and all that stuff, yeah. Maybe.
Wind chill. That's what we used to just call it growing up, just wind chill. Not feels like.
Feels like
I want to stay in bed.
Feels like the first time. Feels like the very first time.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Good morning, Mully. All right. And David.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. The hype for the big game is getting going when you walk in the morning and everyone's talking about who's in and who's out for tomorrow's hockey game.
Morning, Mully. Yeah, we were talking hockey already.
Yeah.
Getting ready for tomorrow night. We've got a couple great hockey guests today. Chelly at 8:45. Tony Granato.
Oh, yeah.
At 9 o'clock. Chicago hockey royalty. And the big question about who's in, who's not, who will play. Will Austin Matthews be back? You said yes.
Yes, he'll be back.
And Cale Makar is back for the Canadiens.
Not good.
Not good for Team USA.
No.
Good for them. And the most highly anticipated hockey game since Saturday.
Yeah. I was sitting there like, oh, but there was a lot of hype for the Saturday game.
A lot of hype. Yeah. Blackhawks back on the ice.
Yeah.
Connor Bedard speaking. So it's the oddest of things.
Who?
Not who.
I asked the question.
At two, Mully?
Why isn't he on Team Canada? Well, they got a lot of depth. They got a lot of centermen. Yeah, he's not.
I wish he was taking part in this.
Get him on that team.
You really feel like he's missing out on something. The opportunity to grow, the opportunity to observe, all those things. It's got to be kind of a conflicting couple weeks because it's almost like he's being sent a message.
Oh, it's a message.
Not ready yet.
It's a message that I've received. I don't know if he has.
And how did you receive it? You interpreted it. You didn't necessarily receive it.
No, I got it. I understood what they were saying.
You're ready for it. He's not.
Yeah. I'm a little, an opportunity to play a couple of good weeks of hockey. That's what's missing.
No doubt about it.
Wouldn't hurt him
at the highest of levels.
That's it.
And tomorrow night is going to be a fascinating study in a lot of things. A lot of things. High-level hockey, high intensity in the crowd.
American politics.
American politics, no doubt about it. And the biggest question, is how each team will respond to getting their players back and what will happen on the ice. The broader question about the experience will be, will the crowd in Boston boo the Canadian national anthem?
Yeah, they will, I would say. No question.
Because, you don't think it's a question? You think it's I mean,
with all due respect to the Boston hockey crowd, I think that theirs will be a knee-jerk reaction to what happened in Canada. There won't be any deep thinking as to why anything happened.
I don't disagree.
I think it'll just be knee-jerk, kind of underscoring the second word there.
I do think that you're right. There will be a visceral reaction almost, probably, to
better word
anthem.
Than jerk.
Well, I'm trying to.
I would say
try to clean it up a little bit.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate the
effort.
I don't
have to do that often.
No, but I am disgusted.
I think a lot of people understand that, and it's
just the lack of understanding of that's all.
And I think that'll set the stage. Here's what I hope doesn't happen again. I hope it doesn't devolve into three fights in 10 seconds or even one fight. I hope they start this game in a way that reflects where the focus should be, and that is having two teams leaving it all on the ice, but you don't have to start with the WWE type of beginning.
Hmm. That's an interesting comment. Again,
do you think that they will have dropped the gloves?
I didn't think so until we started talking about who's going to be booing what. You know, I feel like the tenor is going to be ugly now. And I said yesterday that, no, they're not going to drop. You know why? Because I thought the game was too important.
Mm-hmm.
But then what did they do about it? What exactly happened to the people that dropped the gloves? Was there any real punishment?
No.
Did the league come down and say anything? The tournament
no.
reach out and say, hey, we're not having any of that. The next guy is throwing
the refs were mic'd up
glove.
Or close enough. The players who were mic'd up thought it was cool.
Exactly. It was like, wow, there's real emotion.
Look, it was embraced.
Exactly.
It was applauded.
Exactly.
And it was celebrated.
So there could be more.
There
for
could
that
be repeated.
Reason, it was, there was a sort of, what do you call it? Maybe a just sort of stamp of approval. Is that by not kind of responding in any way, by not telling anyone, knock it off?
Silent affirmation.
Yes.
I think you're exactly right.
That's right. So
I think it's going to come down to the deeper team, the hotter team. I wonder if the home ice advantage will be a thing.
Healthier team?
The healthier team. No question, because you don't know the condition of the Tkachuks.
Right.
And Austin Matthews coming back, you figure
they said that was like a load
management type of decision.
There was just he's a little beaten up, but it wasn't like a specific lower upper deal. I think they called it upper, but it's just one of these deals where he's taken enough kind of abuse. They didn't need him in the game, so they sat him out.
I kind of love this week long, if it's that long, conversation about these hockey debates about mm-hmm. what Makar means to the Canadian defense, what Matthews means to the Team USA's ability to score, how will the Tkachuks react, is Connor McDavid really the best player in the world? All these things are fun if you follow hockey, if you love the sport, and these are things that we don't typically talk about.
That's one of the fears if you're a U.S. fan. If Connor McDavid is the best player in the world, isn't this the moment to show
yes,
it?
Yes, that's exactly in the context I was referring. You're exactly right. And if that's the case, you want that guy on your side because he can explode and dominate. And you worry about that from a Team USA perspective because they may have the deeper team, they may have the more healthy and dangerous team, but if you have the best player on the ice at any given moment, any given shift, you like your chances.
Yeah, you know, one of the questions had been, how is Canada going to handle the Tkachuk brothers? Because they're a different entity together than separate. And yeah, maybe we see that, or maybe they're not up to their,
if they're healthy,
yeah.
And they both are playing, they have to be on the same line.
Well, exactly.
And that is recency bias, but you only are in a two-week tournament. You're only playing a select number of few games. You want to take advantage of every shift. Once it worked, go back to it. So they better be on the same line. I think they both will play. But, yeah, we're going to have some time and fun counting down to really the game that will be the focus of the sports world on Thursday night.
Yeah, it will be. It's a huge game. I mean,
the Bulls come back.
Fun.
You know, they play the Knicks tomorrow night.
Yes, they do.
NBA resumes tonight, I believe. There's a game tonight, perhaps. I think there's a game tonight. And, yeah, Lakers are back with Luka and LeBron. LeBron playing tonight?
LeBron, he'll wait till like warm-ups to let you know he's got like a little ankle issue.
Yeah.
But Luka, will Luka play more than 23 minutes?
Probably.
He's yet to. I wouldn't imagine he
will. He's had a few days off. Yeah. Now he can get on the – I'm sure he's been on the exercise bike. Yeah. I think he's probably in better shape, ramping up, as they say. You don't think so?
I think
he's worthy of at least 30.
I think they've got – serious problems with those guys moving forward because they're going to take turns trying to get as much attention as possible to whatever their phone.
Why are you down on Luka now?
Because he only played 23 minutes.
I know, but
he really hasn't played. He's missed a ton of games, and he's got a calf issue, and he came out of the game the last time and said that it's still not.
Still not 100%.
Yeah.
He's had a couple days off. He's two games only, so it's a small sample size with the Lakers.
Right.
And they're 1-1.
No more than 23 minutes in either game. Just saying. And they made that trade, biggest trade ever, and the one guy got hurt immediately.
Yeah, but you're not winning anything in February.
I wonder if they're going to play much.
They're going to play. They're going to play as much as it makes sense until they gear up toward – it's all about the playoffs. In the Western Conference, you're just trying to get in. You're just trying to get in. It's wide open. It's like the Suns and Kevin Durant.
It would help to have your team.
It would help to have your team, but you want your team healthy in the playoffs. So you've got to – you can't rush Luka. You can't rush greatness.
You can't rush Luka. Yeah, it'd be nice, though, if he were able to actually play.
So they're back tonight. We'll keep an eye on that. And then tomorrow, a more full schedule in the NBA, the Bulls. And I think they're at Madison Square Garden playing against the Knicks in the return to action. They've been off forever, it seems. And you don't know what version of the Bulls will. Well, you kind of know.
Yeah. I think that whatever fear they had of doing well, I think you can let that go.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be any. I think they're going to do a nice job of improving their draft status between now and the end of the season.
Right.
How's that for a positive outlook?
That's right. That's,
their draft status is going to be continually enhanced on a nightly basis. So they can look forward to the best of this draft, and they'll have to look forward to the draft lottery. We'll have to figure out exactly what night that is because that's a big night here in Chicago, as per usual.
Yeah.
Little college basketball action last night. Your Ramblers win.
Yes.
Go good Ramblers. Win for the Ramblers.
Good win. Couple in a row now. That's good to see.
February 19th. About time to start thinking college basketball a little more intensely.
A big loss for the Illini last night. They just didn't look very good. Wisconsin
play well at this time of the year.
And then
they're well coached.
And then Illinois aiming toward that. That weekend matchup, which is super weird.
It's Duke.
It's just weird
at Madison Square Garden.
That's what I'm saying.
Why would you do that?
The season, even though it's
there's marquee value, but I don't know what other value there is.
Yeah. Well,
build your resume,
recruiting. I mean, they're just torn up by the flu right now.
Yeah, but that's why
anytime you have the opportunity to take your team and play at Madison Square Garden against a Duke, you do it.
Okay.
I think. I mean, it's college basketball. They're going to get to the tournament. They're going to be in the tournament.
Illinois?
Yes.
Probably. But that wasn't a good performance last night.
No, but they're missing a ton of guys, and they're sick. So sick. Did you see what happened after the game? The handshake line?
No, what
happened? This is unbelievable.
At the end of the day, guys, we don't have very many healthy bodies. Tommy didn't make the trip with us. He drove up, you know, before the game because he said he wanted to try to play. And Jake Davis got sick right after pregame. And said he wanted to try to start, but he didn't even join us at halftime. He was in the restroom. That's why we didn't shake hands with them after the game. They don't need this. But 38 years, I've never seen anything like what's gone through our team.
So the two coaches go to meet, and Underwood like basically gives the head coach of Wisconsin, the Heisman, like, stand back. And at first, you think something's up, right? Because you don't know what's going on necessarily. And then that's what you heard. So they didn't want to pass along what's going through their locker room with the hand-to-hand, high five, good job, little hug, fist bump, any of that. They just didn't want to pass it along, which I think is a classy move by the Illini and Coach Underwood.
Smart move. It's unfortunate. It really is. But in that context, then they have no business going to New York City and Madison Square Garden and spreading it all over.
Start spreading the news.
That's a bad.
Start spreading the flu.
I'm heaving today. Sorry. That was bad. I didn't know they were that ill. I did not see the handshake line. I watched part of the game, and I will challenge you on whether or not they're in the tournament. They're 17-10, my friend. They're in the Big Ten gauntlet, and I don't know if you can count on that. I hope they do. It's always more interesting of a tournament if they're in it.
Will the flu get brought up and be part of the resume?
You wonder.
It's a good question.
How many other teams are suffering from this kind of flu? Because it is going but around.
Yeah, there's flu in different sporting events. Let's be honest about it.
It's a tough week, though. You play Wisconsin
and then Duke.
And both those teams are tournament teams, good teams in this time of the year.
When did Wisconsin all of a sudden learn how to play offense? Right, I mean, before it was like, you know, you play Wisconsin, the first of 50 would win. Now all of a sudden, Wisconsin scoring north of 70 every night.
It was funny. Who did I hear? Someone was saying it's 25 years since the Big Ten won a national championship, and I immediately was like, "Well, no, Michigan lost." Oh yeah. Well, what about? And I was going through like a list of teams at all.
Yeah, Wisconsin made a couple Final Fours.
Yes,
right?
That's it. They didn't win it though.
I don't want to quibble. Can I get back to that thing, the decision not to shake hands, though?
Sure.
Yeah.
They just played against each other for 40 minutes.
That's now, different. You can't cancel the game.
I know. So, but you've already, to the extent that you can.
Swapped fluids?
It's just one more touch that you don't
need. Bodies that you probably will pass along if you're ever going to pass it along.
So you're saying unsportsmanlike on
Brad Underwood. I'm not saying
unsportsmanlike.
I just think that it's an odd time to
decide you're worried about the
invoke
flu.
That precaution.
Would you rather they forfeited?
No. Well, or I don't know if you're that ill.
I think maybe
postponement.
Maybe elbow bump.
Everybody grab a mask and a bottle of hand sanitizer.
We do those kind of protocols, unfortunately.
I know.
But it's too bad. The Big Ten, five teams are ranked in the Big Ten, I think, now. And you look at Wisconsin.
But all 10 and under.
Yes.
The highest ranked team in the Big Ten is Wisconsin, right?
Yeah, Wisconsin.
And last night you had Purdue and Michigan State, 13-14 play, and Michigan State won against Purdue. First time in five or six attempts.
Now Michigan State has had a couple victories in a row with after kind of not playing as well as they would have liked. But I don't know if they're the best team in the conference. I don't know who the best team in the Big Ten is right now. The parity is real in that league. And I don't think it's the best team in America this year.
Well, I hate to say this, but as long as they're sitting down and meeting for football reasons, they ought to get into some basketball talk because the SEC, believe it or not, is having an excellent year.
That is unexpected.
And has a ton of really good teams.
Yeah. Starting with Alabama and Auburn.
That's right.
Not in that order either. Auburn, number one. Bruce Pearl wins wherever he goes at a high level. And then Alabama, Nate Oates,
who's
got a program going there.
Who was I talking to? So was it St. John's? Aren't they playing DePaul tonight?
St. John's and DePaul, 8 o'clock, right here on the score.
St. John's lost to Georgia earlier in the year. Georgia's got four wins in the SEC. I'm just saying, like St. John's having a really good year in the Big East. But they did lose to a Georgia team that is getting pounded in that league. That's all I'm saying.
That's a good point. It's a good topic. Zach Zabin, 7:45. He can talk to Paul basketball, college basketball. We can talk Bears. We can talk Cubs. Yeah, Zach's a man of many talents.
We kind of need to talk a little Cubs with him.
We do. Yeah, I think we do.
But he hasn't been in Arizona. He just wanted to let us know that. He hasn't been out there yet.
I know.
Okay.
Yeah.
He wanted to make sure that that's not why we're bothering him. I said we want to talk Cubs and Demons.
I think because tonight, Rick Pitino bringing St. John's into Chicago is a relevant game in college basketball because of what he's done at St. John's. And he is a guy that you look at his college coaching resume. Wherever he goes, he turns things around relatively quickly. And he is one of the best college basketball coaches still coaching.
Like 100 years ago, I was covering the Bulls, and they played a preseason game in Kentucky. And I did a couple of stories. They went through New Orleans and they went to Kentucky on this trip. And I drove to LSU and did a story because Jamie Brandon from King High was down there, and they had this guy Shaquille O'Neal.
That guy?
He was just starting his career, and I interviewed Shaq, and then I wound up going into the office with Rick Pitino. He was at Kentucky.
No comment, Molly.
And believe it or not, that game was Sean Kemp's first NBA preseason game. I'm just telling you.
Sean Kemp, Jamie Brandon, and Shaq.
Can you believe that?
Walk into a bar in Baton Rouge.
I know.
That's awesome.
No, but those are different trips. It was the same road swing for me.
But those are big names.
Oh, I know,
man. In college basketball.
Yeah.
That was memorable.
It was memorable as I was standing there and there were like some of these reporters and I turned to Shaq and I just had a couple minutes with him and I asked him a question about Jamie Brandon and coming down to LSU. They had that other guy. What was the guy's name? Some giant. And Shaq shoves this gigantic hand out and engulfs my hand and introduces himself to me and asks me who I am and where I'm from. And we had like a chat for a while. He was just such a good dude as a, young man making his debut. They had, what was the guy's name? They had another 7-footer.
Stanley Roberts.
Holy
Twin Towers.
You thought they were going to be absolutely.
Well, Stanley Roberts did play in the NBA for a while, I believe.
Well, he was a giant. He was not in great shape. And it was interesting because I believe that was they were playing the freak defense in those days. And you just took a look at that team and you thought, oh, they're going to be a national champion.
And that coach was a colorful figure in college basketball.
Dale Brown
could talk with the best of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's a nice little trip down college basketball memory lane. Stanley Roberts and Shaq, they were the Twin Towers. So that was circa, let's see, late 80s, I would think.
Well, Jamie Brandon was Mr. Illinois basketball in 1986.
Okay.
Is that 86.
Right? Wow.
King
so late 80s.
King and Simeon played for the state championship in 1986.
So just consider this. Rick Pitino, who will bring his St. John's team, top 20 team, into Wintrust Arena tonight. Back in those days, he went to Kentucky in 1989.
Okay.
He's 72 years old, still coaching at a very high level. That guy has transcended so many different careers and generations. You got to give him credit. He's not always popular. He's got himself in trouble at times, but he still comes out always having turned around whatever program he's at.
I remember saying to him, hey, is it fair if I ask you how long you think you'll be here, just given your resume? And he said, well, I don't like it, and I don't want to answer that question, but I guess it's fair. And then he had a great answer for it. He was great.
At one point, when the DePaul had one of their many openings, I mean, I think we talked about the possibility of Rick Pitino, and it's like they couldn't, at that point, he was a little too toxic at that point.
I thought about that yesterday. I was talking to someone else about Pitino, and I think at one point in time, he was a candidate at a lot of different places. He was a perennial candidate. He was a perennial candidate to go back to the NBA. When I was in, I can remember being back in South Bend when he was bringing teams into play Notre Dame, and Notre Dame was like always wanting that to be, oh boy, imagine, he would love to be there. He would have been perfect at any program. Indiana has an opening. Rick Pitino is a candidate. He's 72 years old.
Right. It's crazy.
Because people want what he has to offer in terms of charisma, organization. He knows the game, and he can coach. So that's tonight. Can we talk to Zach, good. By the way?
And we will. We'll talk to Zach about all that stuff. And
what was that?
That's Zach. That's his.
Oh, that's Zach's signature thing?
What was that? He was doing like the phone was ringing and he had.
He was talking about the phone noise and he makes the phone noise really well. And then you tried to do it.
And I couldn't do it. It was hilarious. I was with Zach one time and we were, I don't know who we were talking to. And some guy calls up and we went to the phone lines and he said something very nice to me. And I believe I said, thank you, my buddy. I may have said these words, thank you, my buddy, which I don't think I've ever said before. And the two of us, the guy started talking, the two of us, we were roaring laughing. We couldn't continue. We were like hunched over. Zach is
sometimes
so,
it hits you.
He's so especially much with fun. Zach. Yeah. Oh, he's so much fun to hang out with.
Zach is the king of the. He has that little wry smile.
Great guy.
And he will crack you up.
He's so
very funny. Underrated sense of humor.
Oh my God, we had a hard time composing ourselves to finish.
I can see that
getting to a break.
I can see that.
Oh my God, it's just so dumb.
So he's a 7:44.
Yes.
Bruce Levine 8:25. Chelly 8:45. Tony Granato at 9. This is going to be a fun show.
That's a show. That's a show right there. That's it.
A Wednesday.
All right. This is the one.
This is the one.
Send this one out. This is going to be the one they remember. It's Mully and Hall. We got the Pick 6 next on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Well, it's kind of hard when you
phone ring.
It's kind of hard.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing digital deals for members. Signature Farms chicken, split breasts, drumsticks, or thighs, buy one, get one free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. Or a wheat variety bread, 24-ounce selected varieties, buy one, get one for free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. And Progresso soup, 18 to 19-ounce selected varieties, buy two, get three free of equal or lesser value when you buy five. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
The details behind the Diddy indictment, Taylor Swift's stalkers, Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Pick 6 with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top 6 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick 6 with Mully and Haw starts now.
How much better do you feel about the Cubs' depth after yesterday signing of 40-year-old Justin Turner, 1 year, $6 million? What about Chris Flexen? He made 30 starts last year for the Sox.
Yeah, I think that it's a. I don't think Chris Flexen is part of the question, but I do think the positional depth improved with Justin Turner getting that 1 year contract. I do think that he can play some first base for an extended period of time. He could probably do a spot start at third base, and certainly he can be a DH. So he also gives you firepower off the bench. One of the things we had talked about not having when we were discussing it yesterday before he signed. So it's good. It's a good signing. It will help. I don't think it solves all problems or really fixes anything, but it's a good guy to have around. And if his ability in the locker room is as good as advertised, that's a great thing to have.
There's nothing wrong with having a guy that's been there, done that.
Mm-hmm.
I also think it was interesting to hear from guys like Dansby Swanson. Nico Horner was on with the afternoon show yesterday talking about how much they're looking forward to picking his brain, watching his approach, that kind of thing. We're seeing a theme here with Jed. The guys that he has brought in, minus Chris Flexen, have big game experience, have been there, and done that. The Chris Flexen thing, it is part of the question, so I'm going to address it. I think what makes sense about it is his durability, and we've heard from Craig Counsell that they're going to use, especially with this Japan trip, a almost opener-type mentality where you're going to see the starting pitchers pitch a couple of innings, but you may see all five or six potential starting pitchers pitch in those games. And because of reporting earlier, they need additional arms. He's almost like a camp arm or a spring training arm, if you will. And if somebody goes down, it's not a bad backup to have a guy who at least is durable and shows up to work every day.
Yeah, I think that Justin Turner is money well spent. $6 million for the kind of quality depth you get from a veteran like him. He is not only a skilled hitter, but a guy who knows how to talk hitting the way it sounds from Ian Happ and Dansby Swanson. Dustin Kelly, I wonder if he had some overlap with Justin Turner in L.A. We know that Michael Busch spent some time around him early in his career. They had probably intersected during spring training. So there's a familiarity there. And apparently the news is interesting that he turned down a more lucrative offer to come to the Cubs. So there must be a desire on his part. I know his wife is reportedly from Indiana, and so he might like to try to play in the Midwest. This is something that's new for his career. He was in New York, then L.A., and then Toronto and Seattle. So this is he's well-traveled. But I think that he's well-traveled, and he's been around for a while because he's a good guy to have in the clubhouse. He's versatile. Nobody is suggesting that he's there to play 100 games at third base. But he is a guy that has played a lot of games at that position throughout his career. It's not like there would be a degree of difficulty. You don't want to have to count on that, but he certainly provides some insurance to Matt Shaw, a guy that you want to succeed, you think's going to succeed, but there's no guarantee that he's going to succeed. So this was a smart signing by the Cubs.
It's a great question.
Voice of Zach Zaidman. He's here at 7:45. If you're the Cubs and winning in 25 matters most, what would you be willing to trade to the Blue Jays for Vlad Guerrero Jr.? Who on the major league team would you consider including, and how many prospects?
Well, you have to have this thought exercise. If you do what we do and you are the Cubs and you're thinking about what you want to be this season. But you've got to determine that before you have this conversation. If you're Jed Hoyer and Tom Ricketts and Carter Hawkins, what do you want to be this season? Do you want to be the best team in the NL Central? Or do you want to be a team that challenges the Dodgers for the NL pennant? And there is a difference there. It affects your ambition. It affects what your willingness to do, what you're willing to give up. If you have circled 2025 as the year to go for it, because you have Kyle Tucker for one season, more than likely, then you will put together a package to entice the Blue Jays to part with Vlad Guerrero Jr. He is that guy. He is a young star. You, at the end of last season, were a team that didn't have any stars. You added Kyle Tucker. Nice start. Here's another guy who could be there for the taking. Would you take Seiya Suzuki and two prospects? Would Seiya Suzuki waive his no-trade clause to go to Toronto so he can play in the outfield and be happy? Maybe. Don't know. This is all hypothetical. But when a guy goes public with his desire to play one more year in Toronto and be open about the fact that they couldn't come to an agreement, this is an invitation for teams like the Cubs to make their best offer. So, Jed, make your best offer.
Well, for all the hand-wringing, if I'm using it right, and I'm sure if I'm not, I'll be told in a minute, about how much the Ricketts spend, and and they're in the middle, and they should spend more, and I mean, Kenny Rosenthal's personal vendetta against Tom Ricketts, that's something that I don't really understand, and you could look into if you're into journalism, and I just question Kenny Rosenthal. We're going to get into that more in a minute. But this is they've positioned themselves, the Cubs have, by staying under the luxury tax threshold that everybody likes to talk about. They're in a position that if they do what Tom Ricketts and Jed Hoyer believe they can do, which is definitely win this division and play in October, we'll leave it at that for right now, we won't have any fun at that, play in October, now you've put yourself in the position to be able to go and do something like we're suggesting. Go get a Vlad Guerrero, but of course, at what cost? But David, like, if the Cubs are where we all want them to be, Seiya Suzuki is going to be a big part of that. So, again, it's just why do the Cubs always have to give up something good to potentially get something good?
Give up something good to get something better.
If we're worried about not being able to retain Kyle Tucker because his number starts with a 4. Bruce says that all the time.
Yeah.
You know, the number for Vlad Guerrero Jr. probably starts with a 5.
Well, he said that they offered him $340, a contract worth $340 million, and he said it was not even close. So you're probably right. So the question, it becomes real simple. And I know you want to win right now, but given all the financial constraints and all the lack of movement on different fronts and finishing fourth among four teams that are trying to woo Bregman here, do they want to pay him a number that begins with a 5? Or do they want to see what happens with... in other words, it's not that he isn't value and he couldn't come here, but wouldn't you prefer it if you were trading for a guy that you were then going to sign? And if you have no intention, if he's just a rental player, then the price you pay for him is significantly less. The price you pay to get a guy for a year is significantly less than what you would pay for him if he was in your long-term plan. And is their long-term plan impacted by what's going on with baseball economics? And we don't know the answer to that question. But
with that uncertainty, it makes sense if you were going to circle this season as one you want to win.
Like I said, I'm talking about what the value is that you give up for him. So
yeah.
I would not give up one of my, top 8 players, the top players, whoever's the in the top 100. I wouldn't give up a guy like that to get Vlad Guerrero for 1 year. It's a lot. You're asking a lot. But I would certainly make a package that would be presentable enough, and I'd take him for a year. I just think it's like you got a Kyle Tucker problem, right? You already have a guy that you're not willing to pay.
Really, 2025 solution.
Well, okay. I mean, that's the way of looking at it.
It's a good debate.
It's a worthy debate. I'm just saying I don't see them coming up with a number that starts with a 4 or a 5, right? For Vlad Guerrero, I don't see him doing it. I don't see the Cubs splashing out $1 billion at the end of the year for Tucker and Guerrero. I just don't. I think you'd probably be choosing one or the other, and I'd rather get Tucker.
There's a lot of questions in there.
Ah, there he is, the voice of Tom Ricketts. How about a day after Kenny Rosenthal went after Cubs and Tom Ricketts over the Cubs spending? It was the Four Letter Network's Buster Olney's turn. The Four Letter Network national baseball guy pointed out the Cubs were outspent this offseason by, wait for it, the Rays from Tampa, while the Cubs have a significantly higher payroll, $185 million to $72 million. They're spending nearly $30 million less than they did in 24. Why is that?
Yeah, it's a good question, frankly. I mean, there's got to be a reason, right? But they did not. They made some moves. They brought in some players. They didn't make the kind of splash we thought they would. And the fact is that Tampa has some serious issues. Tampa has all sorts of problems because they don't have a building. They're going to be playing in the Yankees, the Yankees minor league building. So that, it's 11,000. So they're trying to do something to make sure they get some people going out to it because they don't have a home stadium this year. The thing that Buster Olney said and that all these guys are kind of concentrating on is that the Cubs have been valued, I think it was Sportico, valued them at $5.4 billion. So, you know, they're spending good money. It's not like they're not spending any money. They have the highest payroll in their division by a mile. But the thing is, there's no team in their division that's worth as much as $2 billion. According to these rankings, they're all in the 1-5 kind of area, 1-5 billion, where the Cubs are 5.4. Now, that's not money in hand, but holy cow, is that a lot of money? And they could afford to pay a lot more. And if you are worth more, you're the fourth highest valued franchise in baseball, shouldn't you have a higher payroll than that? Shouldn't you not be trimming payroll from one year to the next? But that's all just our opinions. We'll see what it looks like.
Concrete costs a lot of money, okay? They put a lot of concrete into Wrigley Field. I can't believe I'm going to actually, you know, quote-unquote carry water for Cubs ownership with my aunt. This is getting crazy because the Cubs haven't – it is not a one-way ticket to World Series success. And even, I mean, the Cubs were never going to spend as much as the Dodgers and the Mets and the Phillies have spent. That's the latest one, is everybody saying, well, okay, so the Cubs are 12th or 13th in spending, but, like, do you realize how far away they are even from the Phillies? You know, the Phillies have $100 million more than the Cubs, and the Cubs are basically $200 million. That's a baseball problem. Okay, that's not... And Steve Cohen, the Mets owner, saying, I will blow the budget because I want to win. Steve Cohen's in a different economic stratosphere than the Ricketts family, who are also in a different stratosphere than every other regular people. But I don't think you can kill the Cubs over this. At some point, you got to let these guys that they've accumulated over all these years play. I mean, oh, sure. Listen, let's see what happens with Kyle Tucker. Assuming that Kyle Tucker has the year that he wants to have, that the Cubs want him to have, I'll be willing to get upset next year if the Cubs are, well, we're going to offer $399 million. So is that a game? Like, they're suggesting that they played a game with Alex Bregman. Like, they just decided to be in the conversation to appease us and be the bridesmaid, as I like to say. So let's see what happens with Bregman. Let's see next year with Kyle Tucker if they're in the actual conversation, he's worth it.
You often see these trends in journalism, and it's become open season on the Cubs from a national baseball reporter perspective. You heard from Ken Rosenthal and now Buster Olney. Bob Nightingale's been consistent, and our guy John Heyman has chimed in. And the tone of it is that the Cubs have not spent enough this offseason. And I think it with our show, I think we've held them responsible, or I've wondered why you haven't reallocated the resources you save from getting rid of Cody Bellinger. That's been my problem. I'm less fixated on the Bregman miss as I am the Bellinger mistake.
Money dump.
It was a salary dump, and it can't be if you are serious about winning in 2025. That's my problem. Now, I can see why people look at the Bregman offer and they compare it to the way the Red Sox structured it and be very disappointed, and exposes maybe Tom Ricketts for not wanting to go over a certain threshold. Fair criticism. He is the chairman of the Cubs. He should be able to handle that. It's not inaccurate necessarily. It might be out of context at times, but I do think that it's valid. It's you are a big market team, and you got outbid, and you weren't ready to go and use mechanisms like deferrals, and you really haven't explained why yet. So I think that what this is, as much as anything, is it, I don't want to say it creates a mandate, but certainly an opportunity for Tom Ricketts to defend the Cubs. He did it at the convention. Bruce and I interviewed him, and he talked about, you know, the breaking even every year. And
he referenced that in his story, Buster Olney.
And I think that was something that, you know, he talked as much as he could have, but I think you have to follow up now that they missed on Bregman. I'd like to talk to Tom Ricketts again, ask him similar questions, and understand a little bit better why they are where they are in terms of payroll. And you know what? The thing about Wrigley, they did rebuild the neighborhood, and it is a credit to the ownership. But at the same time, that explanation always falls short. They're benefiting from that as well.
Oh yeah.
They profited from that as well.
And that is the thing that isn't tangible when you talk about it. They're looking to break even in terms of the baseball expenditure.
The baseball.
But the value of the franchise is going up by the billions.
And because of the baseball, they're able to benefit from everything around it. And that is profit that's not taken into consideration. So I think more than anything, I'd like to hear next from Tom Ricketts.
Terrific question. Need to get that answered. Don't have it for you today.
That's Bruce's voice. He's here at 8:25. How about our guy, Bruce Levine, Score Baseball Insider, reporting the MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred saying the Cubs are working hard with Mayor Brandon Johnson and MLB Security to tie up some important issues and be eligible to be able to host the 2027 All-Star Game at Wrigley Field. Shouldn't all the Cubs' young prospects be All-Stars by then?
That's a great little add to the question. I love that. Yes, they should, and the Cubs should dominate that infield and outfield. Owen Casey batting third for the National League. We're short on time, but Bruce, if they do have the All-Star game in 2027 at Wrigley Field, they should honor Bruce before the game because he has been dogged on this. He got Rob Manfred to talk about this. Crane Kenny has talked about this. This is more likely to happen than not happen, it seems like. So good for all of the planning, and let's hope it all works out.
Can we find out what the issue is security-wise? Like what they need to do? What are these loose ends specifically?
Shutting down the perimeter of Wrigley Field with ways of blocking streets and being able to do that.
So the salt trucks that are being used right now would then have something to do in July. Okay, I got it.
Is that it? Okay.
Yeah.
You just asked a question. You didn't comment on it. I think it's time, isn't it? Don't we deserve another All-Star game in Chicago? It's been a long while. It's been a bit of a drought. So, yeah, bring it back. That sounds good. I would hope that some of those young Cub players are All-Stars by that point. I don't know that they're going to load the thing up. But, yeah, I think it would be it would be great if there were an All-Star game in Chicago and the Cubs had some All-Stars in it. I don't know how that works with the White Sox timetable, the 2027. Maybe they got a couple pitchers in the All-Star game by then, but we'll find out. I'm all for it, though. I think it is. It's been too long since we've had an All-Star game, and I think it'd be a great event.
It's a good question.
Chelios, Chris Chelios' voice there. He's with Mully and Haw at 8:44. Joey Gallo spoke at White Sox camp and said he was just hoping to make the team. What are the chances he doesn't, and what is Gallo's ideal role with the Sox?
Yeah, I think he's going to make the team, and I think that his relationship with the manager is probably one of the reasons. It's probably a reason that he came here is because it's an easy team to make, and I think his role will be to supply power and to hit home runs. I hope he doesn't strike out as much as he's done of late, and I hope that that he can kind of recapture some Fountain of Youth stuff. But I liked his comments about the vibe of the guy. You meet certain people in baseball, and you know they were going to be a manager. You know, the guy's a little bit smarter than everyone else, and the guy's got more copped on, and he's looking at the game in a different way, and he's studying it a little bit differently. I thought it was really good to hear from him about a guy that was effectively a manager in waiting when he knew him as a teammate. So I thought that was a good thing, and it's also just a reminder that there is a place for him because he has that connection, has a really good connection to have.
Adam Dunn not available, so we turn to Joey Gallo.
Cheaper version.
I think, and I joked about this before, but now that we've heard Joey Gallo talk, I think this is about the fact that Will Venable is looking for somebody to hang out with. I mean, seriously. I mean, he's looking for somebody that's around his age that he actually played the game with. And listen, we're seeing it with the Cubs. It can only help to have a veteran around. Let's assume that Joey Gallo, despite the strikeouts, carries himself like a professional, prepares like a professional. That's a good thing. It's one thing for Will Venable to say, when I play the game, but now here's Joey Gallo to show you how to do it day in and day out.
Not only that, but if he does make the team as expected, he's a guy that can vouch for the manager to people who don't know him. And that's a big issue. It's not any bigger with Will Venable than any other first-time manager, but you like to have guys that can help interpret your message or can say, you know what, he's not such a bad guy, or, right, boy, wasn't that interesting. You should have seen him when he was in Texas. All these kinds of things. It helps to have, you know, there's strength in numbers. And the more guys who know Will Venable, the better in that clubhouse, especially with a young team looking for a little direction. And Joey Gallo, despite some struggles at the plate, seems to be, at least his first impression and his reputation is, he's a consummate pro. He's been on some really good teams and some really strong organizations. And now he comes to the White Sox. His biggest value right now, besides the ability to hit the long ball, if he can't connect and make contact, is his example.
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
What do you think of Adam Schefter tweeting that the Chiefs won't apply the franchise tag to guard Trey Smith, but could use the transition tag? The transition tag pays out an average of a top 10 salary at the position instead of top 5 and allows the team to match any offer the player receives from another football team.
Interesting twist. Not terribly unexpected. They want to have the ability to retain him. I think they want to have the ability to make a decision based on their own budget. And maybe this allows other teams to set the market for a guy if that's the way it's going to work. And it's a risk perhaps, but it also gives them buys them a little bit more time. You know, Trey Smith is somebody who, if he hits the open market or if he's even available, the Bears, it should be their number one priority. It should be their top player on the board because the free agency comes first and they'll make decisions on their own guys. I don't think they're going to get involved in the tagging process this offseason, but Trey Smith transition tag would be something that if you're the Chiefs, you want to definitely do what you can to try to keep a top player.
I think this is a brilliant move by the Chiefs. They're not the only ones that saw the tape like I saw. Trey Smith, like many Chiefs, did not have a good Super Bowl Sunday. So let's see what the rest of the league thinks about you, Trey. I mean, some people, I can't believe people would let one game. Yeah, it was the biggest game. It was the biggest stage. He's been talked about how back up the Brinks truck, pay that man his money, blah, 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 blah. And he was getting pushed into the backfield by linebackers that weigh 70 pounds less than him. So go ahead, Trey. Let's see what the rest of the league thinks. Let them set the price. And that, I think center might be a bigger issue than guard for this Bears team as far as the free agent market goes.
Yeah, there's a guy out there at center, the Atlanta center, if he's on the market, and it looks like he would be. Could be a guy, young guy you could bring in. I got to tell you, I think that I think if the Bears have made Trey Smith a priority, this is good news. Because what happens, even though you get the right to match a contract, what happens is if you have the kind of capital that the Bears do, you just put like a poison pill in it.
Bingo.
And that would be like a big-ass payment to open up the contract.
Because it kills their cap.
And
they want to stay away.
And they don't want to.
And it's a lower average because it's a top 10 rather than top 5.
Yes. So, I mean, this is good news for the Bears.
Unless you don't want them.
Yeah, but I'm just saying if that is indeed one of their priorities in the offseason, they got to get people in here that can play. They got to get guys that can actually play and can be available, and he's been both those things.
Just for the record, you think that Trey Smith still can play, right?
I do. I believe he can play.
All right.
Nobody said he couldn't play. Did I say he couldn't play?
I didn't say you said he couldn't play.
I think I heard him say he doubted whether he could play.
Yeah, he can play.
A high level.
I doubted whether he should be paid $20 million based on the fact that his rear end was pushed into the backfield on Super Bowl Sunday more times than not.
Dustin, he's getting paid more than that. That is the reality of where you're at. He's going to make, you know, what is the franchise number? I mean, he's going to make.
Well, it's going to make probably, a lot, 25, because offensive linemen include tackles.
Yes. And 25 is the franchise number, maybe. Mm-hmm. 23 is what he makes under the transition tag. It's a lot of money, man.
A lot of money.
You got to wrap your mind around it. But they got a lot of money, and they got ways of getting more.
And the Atlanta Falcons center you're referring to is Drew Dalman.
Yeah, he's
from Stanford.
He's a pretty good player.
Hits the open market. He'd be the center that Dustin has been longing for.
Yep, he's a young guy too. How old is he?
Yeah, he's 26 years old. So his best football is in front of him.
That's what you need. You need guys.
You get
like
Drew
that.
Dalman. You get Trey Smith. All of a sudden, you draft Will Campbell. Boom.
Yeah.
Although, you're back.
You know they. Let's see who's available in the top 10. I know. You might have to go with a tackle or an end and then double back and get more. I mean, I agree with you. I think two of their first three draft picks need to be offensive linemen. But I don't know if Will Campbell's going to be there, and I don't know who's going to be there. So you might have to kind of assess things in the real time.
No doubt about it. A lot of time to talk draft. But if Will Campbell or Kelvin Banks are there at 10, and you get a rookie left tackle, you get the center from the Falcons, you get Trey Smith, the right guard, you got Darnell Wright, you're talking.
Now we got a plan.
Now you got a plan.
Yep.
Now you got a plan, Dustin.
That sounds good. All right, we've got the extra point next. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the Extra Point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Are you concerned that injuries will destroy the USA chances of winning the championship of the Four Nations face-off on Thursday night? Boston defenseman Charlie McAvoy already been ruled out with word that he was hospitalized in Boston on Monday. The Vancouver Canucks captain Quinn Hughes is going to be in Boston for the game, but can only play if the U.S. has fewer than six defensemen available. He's been out with a lower body injury. Sounds like Austin Matthews and the Tkachuk brothers, Matthew and Brady, will be on the ice.
Yeah, injuries are always going to be part of it. Quinn Hughes was reportedly at Vancouver's practice, so we'll see if that's in play or not, even if it makes any sense for him to go back and forth. Austin Matthews is the big one, and the Tkachuks. They all are going to try to play, and they're all going to play through whatever injury or pain they have. This is as big of a game as they probably played in a very long time, in some cases maybe ever, for the young players. And injuries are part of why Canada was compromised in the first time around. They didn't have Cale Makar, who's one of the best players in the world. So all of these things factor in. It's going to be more emotion than injury. It's going to be more execution than anything. And it's going to be who can rise to the occasion in a hostile environment that will be as good of a sports competition as you might see in 2025. This is as good as it gets. High-level hockey with the best in the world doing what they love. And it may come down to who has the brightest star. Can the Tkachuks as a tandem be able to carry the Americans past Connor McDavid if he explodes and does what he's capable of doing, or will be somebody unsung? It will be riveting. It will be appointment television. And I don't think that ultimately it will be decided by who's healthier. I hope not, because I think that would be fluky, and this tournament has definitely not been that.
As fun as Saturday night was, the family got together on the couch for a sporting event that does not happen all the time in my house. It will mean absolutely nothing. Nothing if you can't finish the job Thursday night.
I'm really looking forward to this game, and I hope that it lives up to the expectations. It is a bummer that Charlie McAvoy is out and can't play, and we don't know. You know, even if Quinn Hughes does make the trip and does get to play, he hasn't played since like January 21st or something. He's been out for a long stretch. He actually made this team and had to pull out in February. I think he was going to be on this team, but he had to leave because of the injury. And so now they're in the championship game.
I saw yesterday that Jack Eichel, who will be on the ice with the Tkachuk brothers if they keep that line together, that he said this is like a Stanley Cup Finals Game 7. It's like there's nothing you can compare this to. This is the biggest game a lot of us are going to ever play in, and it's like a Game 7. I thought, wow, that is really a great way of looking at it. And they're in Boston, which is a hockey crazy town. They have the tournament every year with all the college hockey teams there. It is fun to see that go on. This should be fantastic. It really should be, and it's an opportunity to win a tournament for the first time in forever for the U.S. It'd be a great thing to get done, just because it leads you into next year's Olympics with a real high and feeling really good. Either way, there's going to be a lot of bad blood that comes out of this one. So
bad blood.
Can't wait to
see
it.
Some bad blood.
Yeah. I hope that everybody is healthy and up to snuff. And I hope that for Canada, too. I want to, you know, beat them at their best.
No excuses.
I don't want to hear any, you know, any nonsense about who was there, who wasn't there. And bring it on. Let's go. This is going to be a lot of fun. I'm all for it. And I hope everybody's up to playing. I saw a guy in a Stanley Cup get 17th knocked out and stay in the game. So, I mean,
that's hockey, baby.
Hockey players are pretty damn tough. That's
yes,
what
they
we
are.
Know. All right. 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score.
That's hockey, baby.
Yeah, there are remaining issues that the Cubs are working through with local people. We're hoping that we get in a position. We think Wrigley would be a great host for an All-Star game. But once, I think you will have an announcement once those issues are resolved, assuming they can be resolved.
Wow. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 the score. That is Rob Manfred. That what you just read stopped me cold.
Well, Crane Kenny was on the Inside the Clubhouse back in January. Bruce and I interviewed him about the possibility of the All-Star game coming to Chicago Wrigley Field, and likely it will. And the big question is how they logistically shut down the roads surrounding the ballpark, not only before the game but during it, because 40,000 people in a stadium, as Crane Kenny alluded to, and we'll get that comment and we'll hear it in his own voice before we get out of here, because he put it in some pretty stark terms. But they need to make sure that it's a secure place and stadium. And once they answer some of these security concerns, and they're working with Mayor Brandon Johnson to do that, it sounds like Rob Manfred's ready to rubber stamp it. In 2027, is that, or 2020, the Cubs could be awarded the 2027 Major League All-Star Game. So that would be.
No, I don't want to go.
Here before you know it.
You ruined it for me.
I didn't ruin anything. It's been a long time.
It's been too long.
Been too long. Yeah. 1990, I believe, was the last time the Cubs last hosted the All-Star Game, and the American League won that one 2-0. In an All-Star game, the National League had just 2 hits. So that was quite a...
Not a great All-Star game.
Not right. A great All-Star game. But the Cubs have been down this road before with Mayor Rahm Emanuel, with Mayor Lori Lightfoot, now with Mayor Brandon Johnson. And most of the issues have been related to, or most of the holdup has been, the perimeter. Securing the perimeter during the game. And now they feel like they're in a better position, for whatever reason, to do that. So... It would be good for the city. It would be good for the North Side, and certainly good for baseball, I think.
Yeah, it would be wonderful.
The All-Star game to be
It'd
here.
It would be great. And that's an incredible place, you know, having lived around there at various parts of my earlier life. Is great to be around that area. It's just like a hot, happening area, the ballpark right in the middle of it. It's there's tons of people in apartments. There are families. I mean, there is a lot to be aware of and concerned with. And I understand how you can close down streets and it stops the whole movement of the neighborhood, but it is a larger security
issue. And just to give you this, I'll quote Crane Kenny directly. Even going back to the, okay, so what's been happening internationally, there's a scoring system for each ballpark in terms of perimeter security, and we are last in baseball. The beauty of Wrigley is we play in a neighborhood. That means active streets during the game, 40,000 people inside, and a U-Haul truck that could have fertilizer in it rolling past the gates. That's no good. And the commissioner made it very clear that's no good. Those streets need to be closed, not just from the moment the game starts, but during the game. Progress was made, and then Rahm left office. Honestly, Mayor Lightfoot made a lot of progress with the commissioner and a plan and then was not reelected. So we picked up the torch with Mayor Brandon Johnson, and he's been making a lot of progress. And I think it's very realistic, the expectation for 2027, based on the conversations I'm aware that are happening. That's Crane Kenny back in January, and we heard from Rob Manfred yesterday. Seems like this could be happening in 2027. And Bruce has been pushing this for a long time. And good for him that he stayed on top of this. He asks this question. He's been persistent with the commissioner, with Crane Kenny, with Tom Ricketts, and this has been something that he definitely believes is on the verge of happening.
Well, that's good. That's good. It'd be great. But it is security more than anything else, right? You just got to be aware of where your place in the world is. And
it's the world we live in, unfortunately.
Yeah,
and you got to be awful. You got to take care of first things first before you can have that enjoyment. You got to make sure all those tough questions are answered.
Yeah, it's just a chilling comment. That's all. I mean, we'll get the audio and play it, but a truck with fertilizer and it drives by during the game. Holy mother of God. Help, help, help.
So yesterday was media day out in Arizona. A lot of questions for Craig Counsell. Jed Hoyer spoke about, in general terms, about Justin Turner because I think he has to pass his physical today.
Right.
So the Cubs have a new bench guy, depth piece in Justin Turner. Shota Imanaga is the opening day starter. We'll talk Cubs when we come back.
Yes, we'll get to that next. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.